Today's daf is daf Yud Dalet. Yesterday, we had the Mishnah said Chutz B'Rishut Al Yochadet L'Masik, Rishut Al Nisik V'Masik. So we had there what appeared to be a machlokis between Reb Chista and Reb Elazar about how to read the Mishnah, based on the question of what the din would be of a Chotzer HaShutafim, where two people are allowed to be there, which would be Chayev on Shein and Regel, or which would be Potel on Shein and Regel. So if we learn the way Reb Chista was learning, that Chotzer HaShutafim is Chayev al Hashein v'Regel, then the way to understand the Mishnah is that it's two separate parts, Chutz Mirshut HaMazik, and, but Rishut HaNizak v'HaMazik, Chayev. And therefore it says, Kishizik Chav HaMazik. According to Rebbe Lazar, we understood that the Mishnah is actually saying one thing, Chutz Mirshut HaMazik, where over there you certainly are Potter, because what are you doing in his Rishus? And even Rishut HaNizak v'HaMazik, you'd also be Potter. Then comes a completely separate statement, Kishizik Chav HaMazik, which is coming to be Marbeh, either Alibad Shmuel, which is coming to be Marbe Karen, since according to Shmuel, Shor did not include Karen, because the Mishnah was only talking about Muadim et Chilatam. And according to Rav, it would be a remez as to what the din would be in damages that occur in the relationship of a Shoel and a Mashiel, or the other Shomrim. This is the way we understood it, that the two approaches to the Mishnah are based on a machlokas as to what the halacha is by a Chatzar Shel Shneihem, and only Shel Shneihem, where both of them are allowed to have their Perot. So if that's the case, today the Gemara continues with questioning that approach. And we're up to now the Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph, and we're six lines down at the word Eni. Right almost at the end of the line. Says the Gemara, Eni, is this possibly true, what Rabbi Elazar said? But according to Rabbi Elazar, we say Potter Alashen Valarego, and therefore the Mishnah is talking about two separate Turim, Chutz Rishut HaMazik and Rishut HaNizik V'HaMazik. I mean, look, it's a Beferish Abraita, not like that, because Hotani Rabbi Yosef, Chatzer HaShutafim V'Apundak. If you have a place in which two people are allowed to bring in their things, they own it for Shutafut, or you're in an inn. An inn there too, obviously it's not public property, but whoever is renting a room in the inn has a right there to have their things stored in the inn. Now, Halacha is over there, Chayav Ben, Alashen V'Al Harega. Which would mean that the only way to read the Mishnah would be the way Rav Chista read the Mishnah, that we read the last two lines together. That for sure, Nizik v'Amazik, there the halacha is that Kishizik v'Amazik v'Shalem. Not like Rav Elazar, who said that in such a case it would be Potter. And therefore we have over here, to Yufta de Rabbi Elazar, we have here what appears to be a complete checkmate against Rabbi Elazar. Amalacha Rabbi Elazar. I mean, if you're going to simplify things to that extent, Vitizbra. Let's take your approach for a moment and say that that's what it means. So you're going to have yourself a problem, my friend, because matnita milo plige. You think there's no machloket in the braita? There's a machloket in the braita also. Why can't I be going according to the other braita? V'atanya arba'a kelalot haya Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer ben Ezikin. As far as the venue is concerned of the zikin, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar gave us four different sets with four different levels of chiyuvim when it comes to the zikin. A koshu reshut l'nizak v'lo l'mazik. Chayav bakol. So where you have a reshut where the mazik had no reshut whatsoever, there, when it comes to Karen, he would be chayav. Now, it could have said chayav al hakol, which would have made you chayav on Karen Shein Verega. Instead, it says chayav bakol, which is strange. Later on, the Gemara is going to be medayet. That means that you pay nezek sholim. So even if your Karen is tam, but you invaded another guy's field, you had no right to be over there, you got to pay for the whole thing. So that's chayav bakol. So that's A. B. If it's a reshut of the mazik, Velola Nizek, Potur Mikol. Over there, you don't pay anything because he says, what's your shard doing in my rishus? I can't help it if my dogs attacked him. Shouldn't have been there. If it's a rishut, Lezev Lezev, if it belongs to both of them, Kagon Chotzer Hashutavim, Vahabika, so there you would be Potur ala Shein Vala Regel, because that would be the equivalent of Shein Varegel in a rishus where everybody has the right to be. So in such a case, there's a tour of Shein Varegel and Rishut HaRabim, but Ala Negichav, Ala Negifav, Ala Neshichav, Ala Revitza, or Ala Biitza, all of which are told us of Karen. So there we have the standard Karen, like you would have a Karen Rishut HaRabim, in which Tam is Bishalim Chatsi Nezek, Mu'ed is Bishalim Nezek Shalim. Set D, Lo Lezev, Lo Lezev, Kegon Chatser She'enot Shal Shnehem, if it's a place in which neither of them have Rishut to be, we'll get into exactly what that means a little bit later. So there, chiyev bo ala shein v'ala regel, you be chayev on shein v'regel, and ala negichav, ala nishichav, ala negifav, ala vitzav, ala bita, you would also be paying tam for chatzin ezek, Mu'ed Mishalim Nezek Shem. We'll get into what exactly this section D is a little bit later. But what's important for us right now, Katani Miyad, look, just on the simplest level, it does say, Chatzar HaShutafim V'Abika. I mean, that's pretty clear. Section B, Chatzar HaShutafim V'Abika. Please read carefully. Paturba Alashem V'Alashem. Hey, says Rebbe Lazar. Now, that's saying the exact opposite of what you quoted Rabbi Yosef is saying. And this reads exactly like my halacha. Now, does this bother you? Kashi Adadi? So, in other words, the Gemara asks on itself, indeed, if we read everything in such a simplistic way, so is it a contradiction? Must there be Tushita? No. Because Kitanyahi, Bechotzer Miyuchedet Lezev Lezev Bein Leperod Bein Leshvari. There's a big difference between reading section B and what it is that we had in Rabbi Yosef earlier. Because, look, we can understand chatzar shutafim when two people own a chatzar for all usages. So they can store food in there, and they can bring their shvarim in there. That's one type of chatzar shutafim. But then there's also a chatzar shutafim like Rabbi Yosef was talking about, where he said chatzar shutafim vapundak chayav. That's talking about a chatzar that's miyuchedet only for the storage of perot. But it's not miyuchedet l'shvarim. So in other words, two guys get together to have an area in which they're able to store produce. Obviously, they don't want the shvarim walking around there because then the shvarim are going to eat the produce. So in such a case, legabi shein, having a chatzar hanizik. As far as shein is concerned, it's like it walked into somebody else's rishus. You do not have a right to bring your shor in there, and therefore you would be chayev. Now, I'm not just throwing this out at you. Take a look at the way the two different braitot, Rav Yosef's braitot, and then we had the braitot of Rav Shimon ben Elazar. Look how they phrase. And there's a reason for this. And the reason, obviously, is to say what I'm saying. Look how they phrase the connection of Chatzar HaShutafim. One, Rabbi Yosef, said Chatzar HaShutafim Vapunda. I want to throw in an in. Whereas the other one, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, says Chatzar HaShutafim Vahabik'ah. Now, that's not a coincidence. A bik'ah is a place where you have, indeed, an entire valley that's owned by a number of Shutafim who have their fields in that valley. The norm is in a valley, you can shvarim are wandering about. But the norm is in a pundak, where you have an inn, they have a separate place for keeping the animals. They don't expect people to store produce and things that could get damaged by animals. And in the same place where you have animals walking around, you have a right to leave your shor in the middle of the storage area of the pundak, obviously. You take it around to the back and you give it to the guy who is in charge of the barn. So therefore, the reason that they made that comparison was for you not to be so silly as to read it all as the same thing. There's two different types of chatzar HaShutafim, and therefore there's no argument. If it's a chatzar HaShutafim where you had no right to bring your shor, so then Ein HaKinami, as far as a shein is concerned, it's a chatzar of a biur b'steyacher. And if it's a place where you did have a right to bring your shor, so then it's like any other place where your shor had a right to be, just like it has a right to be in Rishut HaRabim, that's not called a biur b'steyacher. Same thing over here, would be potter because it had a right to be there. And it would only be on Karen that there would be a chiyuv on even in Rishut HaRabim, or in the chatzar nizik b'maaseh. Therefore, there's really no argument between these two bright Torah. As a matter of fact, if you think about it, why did we assume there was an argument between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Kisna? There was an argument in how to explain the Mishnah, but it doesn't mean there's a fundamental argument in what the din is. In other words, the Mishnah could be referring, when it says Chatzar Nizik V'Amazik, to a Chatzar which is Shal Shnehem, even for Shvarim, in which case we would say that it's Potter. And that's what Rabbi Elazar was talking about. Or it could talk about a Chatzar which is lezeh lezeh, which is only for peirot and not for shvarim, and that's what Rav Kista was talking about. And in that case, you'd be chayav. Who's to say that there's any fundamental machlokas between Rav Kista and Rav Elazar anyway? We were assuming all along there's this big machlokas. It's really just a question of what the case is and how it makes more sense to read the Mishnah. That's all. But it could very well be that everybody agrees that it's the same case. This, indeed, the Gemara is going to take up in a minute. And therefore, says the Gemara, there makes a lot of sense because one says similar to an inn, one says similar to a valley. Shmamina. Matkif la Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera says, but this doesn't really make sense. I mean, look, it all boils down to the question of the pasuk. I mean, it's not just a question of morality over here. The way in which we know that Shein V'Regel is chayev only in an area in which it belonged to somebody else, because it says ubir b'steyacher, right? They went and invaded the other guy's field and ate pears there, but if it ate pears in the middle of Rishus HaRabim, it would be putter. Can you call a field in which you and he had a right to keep peirot as another person's field? I mean, so over there, the hezek is basically being done in your own field. It's not another person's field. And the Torah was only mechayev of you in another person's field. Is this a stayacher by any stretch of the imagination? You had a right to be there, and therefore it's not another guy's field. Omale Abaye says, Abaye, well, you're making an assumption. Your assumption is that the definition of ubir stayacher is vis-a-vis what is damaged. That's a leap of faith. It may well be that ubir stayacher is vis-a-vis the entity that's damaging. Now, as far as your shor is concerned, this is definitely a stayacher. It had no right to be there. So who's to say that the meaning of the pasuk simply isn't, and your shor went where it didn't belong? Ubir stayacher. Now, it went in a place where the things that were in the field only had a right to be there for somebody else. Now, who's to say that's what it means? So I say ubir stayacher. It's a reference to where your shor belongs. Your shor had no right to be here. To be or to stay out there. What's wrong with that? In which case, we can maintain still that there were two completely different types of chatzar shutafim without any problem. So, Amalei Abaye, kiva de'ena miyuchedet l'shvarim, since it's not a place where you're sure had a right to be, that's called the Sedeyacher Karina Bay. Very simple. Amalei Rav Achmi Difti Ravina. So, Rav Achmi Difti pointed out to Ravina, if we now have explained that blema minimatinita lo pligi, that the brightot don't necessarily have to be arguing with each other, because there's two types of chutzar shutafim, perhaps amoroi nami lo pligi. It's possible that what we assumed all along was a machlokas between Reb Chista and Reb Elazar never happened. Maybe they were simply discussing two different types of chutzar shutafim. One which was a shutafut only in terms of the right to store peirot, and the other one which was a shutafut for all usages, including the presence of your shor. Absolutely, that's a possibility. I mean, I don't know. We don't have enough information to know. But it's certainly possible that there's no real machlokas between Reb Elazar and Reb Chista. Now, if it turns out that there is, I mean, currently we don't have enough information, but imtim salabra pligi, if it turns out that there is an argument, we know what the argument's about, don't we? It's about what Rebbe Zera just attacked us on and Abaye's answer. Because Rebbe Zera was saying, this is not called Ubir B'Steyacher, because he understands Ubir B'Steyacher was a question of the produce, not a question of the shor. Whereas Abaye said, it is Ubir B'Steyacher, it's a question of the shor. Those two approaches to the psukim, which already are far more complex, we'd have to get into the analysis of the context of the dinim over there, but that could certainly form the basis of a machlokas as to what constitutes a chatzar shutafim, the gabe de ptur. It could be.
Maybe.
But getting back to the section D of Reb Shimon ben Elazar, which was a little bit iffy, I'd like to explore that again. Gufa. Let's take a look at these Arba Klalot, four sets of Reb Shimon ben Elazar ben Ezekiel. Let's go through them again and see if we can make sense out of them. Kol shul reshut nizak velo lo mazik, chayav ba kol. Notice, this is very interesting. It should have said chayav al hakol, meaning on chain and regal and karen. But instead it says, it's chayav ba kol, which would mean you're chayav for everything, 100%, not only chayav at all types, okay? So ala kol lo katani, ala chayav ba kol, which means that you are chayav in all of the nezek that occurs 100%, and there's no din of chatzi nezek. Aha. Now, money, who's that going according to? That's going according to Rabbi Tarfon. That's Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon's halacha is that mishune keren b'chotzer ha-nizak pays nezek shalem. That where you have Karen acting in a mishuneh way, in other words, it's tam, but it's in the reshus that belongs entirely to the nizak, so it invaded your field. In such a case, you don't get off 50%. Your shor didn't belong there at all. It's only where you're walking reshut rabim, or a place where you have a right to be. Over there, we let you off at 50%. You have no right to be there at all. Then we don't let you off at the 50%, and you'd be chayav nezek shalem. Okay. The problem that I have with this is that case D is a contradiction to it. Because take a look at that last case again. Ema sefer. If it's a chotzer, which you said is lo lezev and lo lezev. Kedon. Chotzer she'eno shal shnehem. If it doesn't belong to either of them, so then you would be chayav on shein and on regal. Now, what do you mean when you say lo lezev and lo lezev? I mean, if you're telling me ilem lo lezev and lo lezev klal, neither of them have reshus to be there. But rather, it's da acher. So then how does this fit, the bir b'stei acher? Because I did not go into a stei acher. I went, in other words, the acher can't refer to some baal that has nothing to do with the case. The acher has to have reference to the case. So over here, I go into a place where you had no business being. So this was, let's say, a closed military area. So my shor goes wandering around closed military area. Fine. So now you want to give me a fine? Give me a fine. That has to do with criminal offenses. It happened to be that you were using the closed military area
to store your food.
So I should be chayav from my shor eating your food where your food wasn't supposed to be. That's certainly not called a beer b'stei acher. It wasn't yours either. You have no right to be there. So that can't be the case. So when you say it means lo lezeh v'lo lezeh, what you mean is it doesn't belong to one of them, to both of them, it belongs to one of them. No. So then you're back to section A. Section A was where it belonged to one of them, and I went into the other guy's rishus. But you said before that I was chayav 100% if I went into the other guy's rishus, and now you're saying I'm only chayav 50% because it's a short time. How do you support these two? This is crazy. And you tell me, and what's the rule on section D? So now that's against Rabbi Tarfon. The first section was Rabbi Tarfon, and the last section is against Rabbi Tarfon. This is crazy. So you're telling me that in the four klolim, we have the Reisha going alibid Rabbi Tarfon, and the Sefer going alibid Rabbanan? That's exactly what I'm telling you, Ian. The Amar like Shmuel or Rabbi Yehuda. Shmuel pointed out to Rabbi Yehuda, who was trying very hard to find some case that would satisfy a requirement of a different type of section D that would satisfy the din of Chatzin Ezek and would not be a contradiction to section A. Shmuel saw him sweating over this for a couple of weeks, and he said to him, listen, Shinana, Shinana means sharpie. So Shinana, do me a favor. Let it go, man. Just let it go. Shvok Matzis, let go of this brighter. V'tabatroi, follow me, okay? Reisha Rabbi Tarfon v'sefer Rabbanan. Basically, what he was trying to do in creating these four different dinim was just to indicate to you that there are four locations with these different dinim. It wasn't necessarily saying that they had to be consistent. They're not necessarily consistent. But that there is a way of understanding section A only in context of your understanding that there's a machlokus about this by reading section D. So he forces you to confront that, but he doesn't mean that there's four different dinim.
Isn't it the same as case number one?
Yep. Except that it's a contradiction. Because in number one you said you're chayav bakol, and in number two you said you're chayav 50%. It must be that he's coming to teach you that that's true, section A is true, only according to a shita that differentiates between it and section B, which is Rabbi Tarfon. It's not really four klolim. We're going to discuss them. Four ways of seeing the halachas as applied to different rishuyos. Yeah, true. Ravina mishmei rov amar. No, this has got to work out according to one man diomar. Look, yeah, it must be kula Rabbi Tarfoni. It's got to be gone. Look, the reisha is unabashedly Rabbi Tarfon. There's no way to argue with that. I mean, it says chayav bako. That's a given. Now, the only way to work it out in the sefer that the sefer should go on libid Rabbi Tarfon is my lo lezev lo lezev. The last case must mean lo lezev lo lezev leperot. That means only one of them had a right to have perot. Eladechad. And when you say, however, legabi the shvarim, it is lezev lezev. When it comes to the shvarim, in fact, both of them have a rishus to be there. Therefore, as far as Shane is concerned, it's considered to be the chatzar anizek. Because only one of them had rishus to have the perot there. So it's a straightforward ubir b'steyacher. And memela I'd be chayim. Masha enkin legabit keren. Both of us have rishus to be there. So if I went ahead and gore his shor, I'm goring his shor b'rishu terabim. In which case, it makes sense that this would be legabit keren chatzi nezek. Legabit shein, it would be a nezek shalem, because it's talking about a chiyav in the rishus hanizek. This is the way our Gemara has the girsa. Tosfos doesn't like this girsa at all. The Rabbeinu Tam changes the girsa. Let's just remember what we're saying. We're saying a very interesting halacha. We're claiming that if only one person has a right to store food in this area, and he did not allow a shutaf to store food there, so he needs a lot of storage space. Okay, so he says, look, I'll tell you what, let's buy this together. I'll pay 80% of the price, but I get the sole use of the area for storage. You're paying only 20% of the price, because you're buying it only for a parking space. So you keep your shor there, I'll keep my shor there, obviously, my 80%. You have a right to keep your shor there. So therefore, as far as Shane is concerned, we say, this Shane went ahead and ate from a field that entirely belonged to somebody else. That's ubir b'steyacher. Mashenkein, if the two cars attack each other, so over there, both of them had rights to be there, and that's considered to be a normal case of Karen b'rishut harabim. Karen b'rishut harabim, that's what our Gemara is insisting. Says the Rabbeinu Tam, this gear doesn't make any sense to me. I don't like this at all. I say that what it should say is, in fact, lo lezev or lo lezev l'shvarim, that as far as the shvarim are concerned, then they don't both have a right there. Therefore, for the shein that had no right to be there, it's a chatzar hanizik, because he was eating peirot that he had no right to be there to eat. Masha enkin vis-a-vis the shvarim, it's considered to be the equivalent of keren b'rishut harabim, because neither of them had rishus to come in with their shor. So therefore, we both basically are as much responsible. And he doesn't like our girsa. Why? He says, because in our girsa, why would we consider it to be a chatzar hanizik, since you have rishus to be there? Now, you'll notice the similarity of this to the machlokas that we had before, Halibut Rabbi Zeira and Abaye. Do we measure the ubir b'steyacher in terms of the peirot, or do we measure the ubir b'steyacher in terms of the shvarim? So Rabbi Tam does indeed touch upon that issue. And he claims that we don't want to say over here that it's lezev lezev b'peirot v'lo l'shvarim, but that would be not like Rabbi Zeira. But it is no gay of the previous sermon. Okay, so the question would be, how do we view the ubir b'steyacher? You can see that this has a lot of implications, which will become clear as we continue on in the dinim, the prote dinim of this case, shein b'rishut acher. Okay. Yeah, you're in a place. In a way, I mean, it gets into very fundamental questions about the nature of the balance of nezikin. You can see that. Remember, nezikin, there's always two separate issues in the balance. There's the issue of my rights to have an entity that can cause damage, and then there's the issue of my rights to have things here that could be damaged. So to some extent, I'm taking a risk, the person who's putting these things there. To some extent, the other person is taking a risk in terms of being negligent with his shmirah. So here the question is which one we focus on, obviously. If the issue is that in a case where you don't have share, again, we're talking about the structure of society, you don't have mutual rights in this area to have things, then that may, by definition, make it incumbent on the person who doesn't have those rights to protect the rights of the people who do have those rights. Masha Enken, where both of us have the same rights and both of us are taking the same risks, it may be that mutuality is more in the direction of, look, I mean, we're all the same as far as this is concerned. In which case, if I want to have rights and you want to have rights, we'll have to be mevater on a certain level of our ability to collect from the additional rights of maintaining dangerous things in the same area. You see how this touches on the underlying issue of how we want to create the interrelationship between people. So this, what appears to be a minor machlokas here in the gears of the sugya, really could turn out to be very, very fundamental in terms of how to view the entire issue of nezikin. But again, we're just getting started in this lovely sugya, so let's just keep it in mind for the future. Can you say that in English? Okay, yeah, that's what it's nogea. Normally in Rishut HaRabim, what we say is, if I have a right to be there, I don't have to put fences around it. You have to protect. Or because normally in Rishut HaRabim we say, look, we all have mutual rights, we all have mutual responsibilities. In such a case, because it's a public thoroughfare, so I understand that if I want to take a chance, since you have just as much rights as I have, I'm taking a chance. And as you're suggesting, if you want somebody not to damage your payroll, so put a fence around them or protect them or don't put them there and so on, correct? But over here, he's saying, the reason I spend money to be the only one who has rights is in order that you shouldn't have the rights to damage my things. And you should be responsible. Doesn't that make sense? I pay 80%. You had the right to park your shar here, but obviously the very fact that you don't have rights to have peirot here mean that you have to take extra steps to protect my right to have peirot. That's the question. All right, so this is the machlokas in the girsaot. That's exactly the issue. Why are you joking about it? I don't understand. That's the question. It's a very fine balance. So the question is, how does the balance interrelate with my rights to two completely different elements, my rights to what's being damaged and my rights to keep things there that can cause damage? You could see how complex this is, right? And how it changes where the mutuality level changes. So how does that affect things? The mutuality level of one may indeed have bearing on the mutuality level of the other in terms of the chiyuv of shmirah. Who's the one that's supposed to be more protective? Says the Gemara, but then how do you get four divisions? I don't understand. Yachi arba'ah. Shlosha havi. I mean, what you're telling me is, I mean, all you did, you just played a little trick on me. You said that what section D is talking about is that vis-a-vis the Shein, it's a Chatzar HaNizik, and vis-a-vis a Karen, it's a Rosh HaSarabi. Fine, so then there is no section D. Section D is composed of, partially, section A, when it comes to those things that are only one-sided, and it is partially section B. I mean, I don't understand why you're making this into a different section. And you see, Bishleima, the way Shmuel was explaining it, that it's a machlokas, Rabbi Tarfon and the Rabbanan, and that this really is a different type of rishos in terms of that question. What's the din of Karen Mishon and Rishos? Okay, I understand you can call this a separate section because I need each one to define the other one. That this is not true only by the Rabbi Tarfon, it's not true only by the Chachami. But if you're telling me it's just a combination, I mean, so how do you get, you're telling me there's four fundamental areas, four fundamental venues, and then you tell me, well, really there's three, but we could start putting them together. I mean, thanks. So then there's that four fundamentals. Reb Nachman Bar Yitzchak gets true. He wasn't saying there were four fundamental venues. He was saying that there's really three different klolim. There's only three fundamental ideas that are being applied here in four locations. But as far as the conception of these venues are concerned, it's true that there would be only three fundamental conceptions of venues. And that's true. And now our president is on duty. Shume Kesef. This Mishnah is a continuation of the completely incomprehensible previous Mishnah and makes new records of incomprehension. Shum Kesef, Shove Kesef, Bifnei Beitin, whatever the heck that's supposed to mean. Evaluation of money, equivalency of money in front of the court, which doesn't even hang together grammatically, none of this makes sense. V'alpi Edim B'nei Chorin, B'nei Brit, and only on the basis of testimony which is given by B'nei Chorin and B'nei Brit. V'hanashim b'chlal ha-nezek, women are included in exactly the same way as men are, whether they are the Nizik or the Mazik. And you should know that the Nizik and the Mazik both participate in the Tashlum. My goodness gracious. All right, so these past, I mean, they're not really two different Mishnayos, but it's really one Mishnah that's giving us over the rules in such a way as to be so broadly inclusive that we don't know what they're talking about. So these Mishnayos are extremely abstract. Let's get into what this might mean. So, my shum kesem, when you're saying estimation of damages is in terms of evaluation in terms of cash. Omer Rav Yehuda, what it means is that shum ze lo yehe ela bekesem. When Bezdin estimates the inyan of damage, the damage is translated into an analog which we call value. And we do not say that there is, because of the personal relationship that's involved in any damage, look, I mean, this isn't just a thing that was damaged. It wasn't money in a bank account. It was an entity with which I had a connection. So you might think that the fact is that there's two participants in damage. Well, let's say a shor is damaging a talit and gets its legs now stuck in the talit acts as a bar on the shor. Maybe what we should say is, look, you two guys damaged each other, you know, you're a bunch of bums. He'll take your shor and you take his talit. Or maybe we should say, let's just call it even Stevens. You were mean to me, I was mean to you. So it comes along the Mishnah to say that actually damage, even though lemaisa, we do understand that tashlumin is always an analog, but the fact is, once that's true, the analysis of what's defined as the damage is always in terms of money. Even though you can go and say, money will never repay me for my great-grandfather's talus. Fine. Go complain. But this is the way that the Torah tells us to estimate damage. Take cash. And Tanina Lahadatana Rabbanan, in which case the Mishnah would be saying what the Braita later on expands upon, which is that in a case where a para is mazik a talit, and a talit is mazik a para. Now I want you to know that Tosfos says that according to Rashi, this is not our Rashi. Apparently there was another Girsa in Rashi. That Girsa shows up over here in a half of a Rashi, which is contradicts itself, is that it's talking about a case in which there's mutual damages, which Tosfos points out is very problematic, because how do you get in one Rishos where you'd be chayev for these two things if I'm the one who started up with the talit? It's very, very problematic. But anyway, Lemaisa, both Rashi and Tosfos end up understanding this to be two separate things, not one case. So in other words, if you have a case of a para, that's mazik a talit. Or another case, a talit is mazik a para. So you might think, all right, so let's just say, they'd say para, but talit, okay, so take the other guy's talit, if the talit damaged your para. Or take the other guy's para, if it damaged your talit. No, you don't say that. They'd say para, but talit, talit, para. So is that a type of ayin tachat ayin kind of thing? in which we understand that ayin tachat ayin also is analyzed. The reason that the Torah tells us ayin tachat ayin, instead of saying pay cash, is because in fact the cash is only an analog for the damage it's caused. Morally speaking, we're looking at an ayin tachat ayin. Now there's no way for me to actually take ayin tachat ayin, as the Gemara explains later on. So if there were, maybe inokinami. In other words, if I blinded another guy, and there was a way in which I could take his eye and use it as a replacement for my eye and plug it in, so maybe inokinami, you took away my eyesight, I'll take your eye to take away your eyesight. Not as a punishment, but to use your eye for my eyesight. You should replace my eyesight, right? This comes along the Gemara and learns out that what the Pasuk really means to tell me in practical terms is that you pay an analog for the eyesight. Well, obviously the guy will say, no matter what you pay me, it's never going to make up for my eyesight, which is obvious, that's true. When it comes, however, to Nezikin, then it's not so simple. What do you mean? I shouldn't take your shor? What, went ahead and damaged my shor? We should sit around now and worry about how much your shor was worth and how much my shor was worth. I say that's ridiculous. You took away the life of my shor, I want your shor. That's so crazy. So kamash malan, that the Mishnah is coming to tell me, the Chiddush, that even though the payment could only be an analog, halacha l'maaseh, it's the only way for us to deal with Nezikin, and there are no exchanges made when it comes to Nezikin. Because even if you would take the other guy's shor, you wouldn't be making up for his shor. No, not yet. And let me explain, however, further. What would be the havamina, Rabbi Tam is bothered by, of thinking that I would have a right to take a talent? Because a talent is a bor, and a bor is not mishtalei migufa. You see, so bishleim, if you're talking about Karen, okay, Karen, the shor is personally responsible, so to speak. There I could think an exchange makes sense. But a bor, despite the fact that this bor happens to take on the shape of a talit, there's still no din of mishtalei migufo. So why would it be saying such a thing? Therefore, he says, that the inyan, it's a rather detailed issue, but it's a fascinating approach. He says the inyan of the talit is only coming to tell me that you might have thought that even though the Torah says min ha'aliyah, in other words, you paid from your bank account, you might have thought that that is meant to give additional rights to the nizik. That if you don't have something for him to collect from, he can go and collect from your bank account, right? But how about in a case where limiting the rights of collection to your bank account is actually a downside to the nizik? And where would that be if the bazik dies? Now he comes to the yatomim. The Yatomim, he left no property. The Yatomim say, what do you want from us? There's no property. So you might think the guy could say, now wait a minute, the talit that destroyed my shore is right here. Give me the talit. So the Torah says to collect min aliyah, but that was only to make things better for me, not to prevent me from collecting at all. So maybe in these circumstances, I would be able to collect from the actual entity that caused the damage, you see. And it's not going to be worse than the shore. It's only meant to be better. In this case, where I've tried to collect from the Yatomim, caught me just in time. Karen? What's Karen? The din of a sock in the nose? Is Karen?
No, it might be shame. It's not a joke.
That's true. But he sensed it coming. It's interesting. It's the first time he's like, ah! So, I really would appreciate if you'd bring in your cattle prod again.
Sure.
Our case is a beautiful argument, so therefore it really is coming to tell me something that I could have worked out legally in my mind in an intelligent argument. It's not just a statement, Stam Biyama over here. You can see the multi-leveled meaning over here of this statement. Shum Kesef, it sounds like nothing, and then you get into it. It's got all types of amazing applications, and it's a totally abstract word. Shum is to be done in Kesef. Okay, the next thing is Shavet Kesef, or what is that supposed to mean? Shavah Kesef. The Tuna Rabbanan, indeed, the Braita says, Shavah Kesef teaches us, somehow, Shavah Kesef gets translated into the words real estate. Now, how the heck that happens is very strange. The Gemara is going to question how in the world Shavah Kesef suddenly came to mean real estate, because that's certainly not what it usually means. But in any event, let's assume for a moment it means real estate. So this comes to teach us that Beit Din only deals with real estate. Which is, of course, ridiculous. What do you mean Beit Din only deals with real estate? Aval, Im kadam nizik v'tafas metatlin. However, if the nizik went ahead and grabbed non-real estate, so he took chattel, then beitin govin lo mehem, the beitin will allow him to collect from that chattel and make an analysis of how much it's worth, etc., etc. Now you understand that now one word of this makes the least bit of sense. Shavah kesef does not mean real estate. Besdin is not limited to the collection of real estate. And what in the world it would be saying that if you're taifas, only then you can keep a tatlin is completely wrong. There's no such halacha. And therefore, so far, the Mishnah is still completely mad. Right. So we have to first look at each one of these absurd assumptions. Omar Mar, Shavah Kesef somehow teaches us She'ein Beidin Nizkakin Ela L'Nechasim She'esh Lam Achrayut. Whether that makes sense or not, my mashma, I mean, where in the world does the word Shavah Kesef take on the meaning of real estate? It's the last thing that it means. Omar Rabba Bar Ula, well, look, we can use the word Shavah Kesef in a strange way. Maybe Shavah Kesef could be read as Davar HaShaveh Kol Kesef, something that is worth whatever you pay for it. Now, what's worth whatever you pay for it? If you overpay for metaltalin, the din is that you can recover anything that you overpaid that was over one-sixth of the value that the market value is. There's only one thing where there's no market value, as we all know, and that's real estate bubbles. Real estate can be worth anything. So somebody pays this crazy amount, and then he says, hey, wait a minute, somebody told me I was chipped. What do you mean you were chipped? You liked the property, you paid whatever you wanted to pay. There is no market value. You determine the market value. Okay? This is not strictly true, because if you go over 100%, or 50%, depending on how you look at it, then there would be ona, even for karkaot. But fine, but in other words, within the general range for which other things would be considered ona, you could recoup your overpayment over here, something that's worth, whatever you paid for it, would be real estate. That's a new reading of the word shavah kesef. This thing is worth any amount of money. Not, it's something that can be translated into money. Weird. Okay. But let's say that's what it means. So, davar she'ein lo ona'a. No, because the din is that avadim, vishtarot, now you're talking about selling bonds. Oh, man, selling bonds, you want to talk about bubbles. No. And avadim, the same thing. It's worth different things to different people. I mean, there's the same thing over there. Ein lem ona'a. So what are you going to tell me? That now it means, I thought you said it means only nechasim shiesh lamachrayut, which is not true of avadim ishtarot. Okay. Says Rabbi Baruch, okay, I got another approach. It means a dovra hanikna bekesef. Shavah kesef doesn't mean something that's worth money. Shavah kesef means something that is worth to you for the money that you gave it to be yours. So since chattel, in order for you to be kainit, you'd have to actually lift it up. When it comes to real estate, the moment you pay for it, it belongs to you. That's what it means. No, we have the same problem. Avadim v'shtarot nami or niknim b'kesef. Tosfos takes up shtarot, because the shtarot doesn't really, we don't know where this comes from. Rashi says, I don't know what the proof is to that. Tosfos says, the gears is wrong. It should just say avadim. Okay. So avadim are also niknim b'kesef. Elo amar avashi, what it means is like this. It's shavah kesef and not kesef. It means the regular meaning of shavah kesef. Shavah kesef means it's not cash, but it's something that has the value of cash. Well, anything that is movable is cash. Because ultimately, it's instantly translatable into some type of value and could be exchanged for something somewhere on eBay. The only thing that can't be is actual real estate. So real estate, we say, well, that's not cash. It may be worth cash, but it's going to take you a while to turn it into cash. So I have to liquidate my holdings. Liquidating my holdings is a reference to real estate. Masha Inken, when it talks about having indeed something else, your piano is cash. Vani kuli kesef nino, and it's using it in that sense. But then it's not true. Because Tana Shavah Kesef, you just claim that Shavah Kesef means that Ein Beit Din Nizkakim Ela Nechasim Sheyesh Lo Achrayut. That Beis Din can only go after real estate. Now that's absolutely crazy. V'atanya, I mean, we all know about Yashiv, about Shavah Kesef. We were talking about pork bellies all along. Afilu Subim. So now all of a sudden we're contradicting what we know to be the halacha, that you have a right to sue in court. The court can actually get even Subim from you. So what are you telling me? You have to have real estate. Well, I neglected to mention that the Mishnah is referring to a case where the man is deceased. So you're only coming after his biatme. Achum, I askin him biatme. So it means you're coming to collect from his heirs. The din is you can only collect from his heirs where there's a lien. But that's only in a case where there's real estate. Therefore, the Mishnah is saying that you can collect only shavah kesef, meaning property. or the last things you would have guessed, huh, would be the meaning of those words in the Mishnah. Says the Gemara, but then if it's biyatmi, then the rest of the braita doesn't make sense. Same as seifa. It says im kadam nizik v'tafas betaklim beitin go vilo mehem. That's not true. The nizik comes along, and he grabs now the TV set out of the house where the yatomim are living. You're telling me that they can't get that TV set back? Obviously they can't. They'll go to court and say this madman came into our house, took away our TV set. The guy will say, what do you mean? Your father owed me money. And they'll say, but you had no right to collect anything that we own. This is what we own. Show us a field that you can collect from. There's no lien on television sets. So how can you say that the Bezdin will be goven, allow him to keep the television? Am I beitin goven lemehem? Answers the Gemara, well, like Rav Amr Dachman said in a different place. Shetafas bechayim. It's talking about over here, he grabbed the TV set before the guy died. See, he's a smart fellow. He sees this guy's in the hospital. He says, well, I'm not going to wait for him to die and me to try to recover money from the yatomim that don't have any property. So he runs into his house and grabs his TV. Then the guy dies. So now the yatomim sue him and they want their television. He says, I got the television while your father was still alive. So now the best that has to be going from the television. And that indeed is true. So in such a case, if he stuff us mikhaim, then the beitin will be goven lemehem. So now at last we have some explanation of a completely ridiculous statement in the Mishnah, which is said in such a way as to make it essential for us to find the most unbelievable fetch in order to make it make sense at all. Unbelievable. Now how about the next thing? Bifnei beit din. It has to be done in front of a court. Which means what? Prat l'mocher nechasav v'achar kach olech lebeit din. So what are you telling me? That Beis Din only looks at real estate, and it's got to be real estate that was in front of the court. In other words, if I sell out real estate from under the guy's nose, so now it was not real estate that was in front of the court, so now we can't collect from real estate. In other words, this Mishnah says everything that we know is not true. It's insisting on saying things that are completely not so. And what is this one supposed to be? This is as bad as Sefer Yecheskel. It's as if you go out of your way to say things that you know are not true, but that if you sit there and fetch enough, you can figure out some particular application in which it would be true. It's a very strange way of doing things. So now what is this supposed to mean? I mean, surely you're not trying to say, Shvamina, that if a guy borrows money, and then he sells his property, and now he comes to the Beis Din, that Beis Din said, well, too bad, he sold the property already. Where's the money? I made off with the money. So then ain't Beis Din govin lomiyam. So that can't be what it means. Ela prat lebeit din ed yotot. All that it's saying is that if you're going to go to a court, it has to be a court that has smicha, which is also not true. It does not have to be a court that has smicha. The din is, you go to any court, even a court in Chutz Laretz, where there's no smuchim in Chutz Laretz, real smicha, because we say that we do the shlichut of the Beit Din in Eretz Yisrael, and we continue to do that 2,000 years later, so even this isn't true. Where is it true? It's true but dinei kenasot. That we don't dan dinei kenasot bebavel. Says Rashi, why? This is what it's referring to. Prat lebeit din shel ed yotot dinei kenasot. Of course, the Mishnah wasn't talking about dinei kenasot. The Mishnah was talking about the arba avot nezikim, especially if you say tadashol l'raglo umav alashino. Karen, maybe you could say chatzin as a Karen is dinei kenasot, but I mean, according to Shmuel, I mean, it doesn't even make any sense. Says Tosis, yeah, that's true, but you know, it's just a list of rules that have some application in some place or another on earth. So this is true in some place or another on earth that you have to use a beit din, meaning a beit din of mumchin, when it comes to knas anyway. Says Tosis. The next piece of the Mishnah is explained as referring to Knas. Nobody got up there and shouted, but we're not talking about Knas. So obviously the Gemara is willing to tolerate Pshatim that are limited to Knas, even though we haven't been discussing Knasot. Because look at the next piece. The next piece says, Alpi Edim, it has to be based on witnesses. Well, obviously it has to be based on witnesses. I understand. What, this is like a new idea that we need witnesses. Ah, Prat Lamoda B'Knas V'Yachakach Bo Edim Shul Patur. What it's coming to tell me is that it has to be that the entire case is based on witnesses. But how about if the guy would come along and would admit to owing the money, and then the Edim show up? So you'll say, well, who needs his admission? We have witnesses, and therefore this is not included as motive b'knas patur. Comes along the Mishnah to say that no, since the case went ahead with the guy's own hoda'ah, and it was not Alpi Edim, showing up afterwards with witnesses doesn't change anything, because now it's not Alpi Edim. Well, wait a minute. That's only true if you hold that. I mean, there's a big machlokas as to what the din is if somebody's motive knas and then witnesses show up. But how about according to the man, the motive knas edim chayav? So then, what is the meaning of the statement al pi edim? It's not saying anything. Well, the thing that it's coming to teach us is not al pi edim, but rather al pi edim b'nei chorin u'b'nei brit. That's what it's coming to tell us. That's all that's important. The al pi edim, you separated it out as if it was a different statement. It's all one statement. And that is b'nei chorin u'b'nei brit. That's what it's trichalet. So b'nei chorin is l'me'ute avadim, and b'nei brit is l'me'ute avdei kochavim. And the Rambam says that the reason that the Mishnah has to tell us this is because the truth is that most of the interactions of Nezikin on a very low level, if you're talking about shor and bor and barns and so on, will be only in terms of avodim. In other words, who's the guy that's going to know what's going on? You're basically going to have people that are working for someone, and they're the only ones that can tell the court what happened. So you might think under those circumstances, there's people around, you have no choice but to accept the testimony of people that are not normally considered to be ro'i le'edut. Kamashra in the Mishnah, that Nezikin is no different than anything else and requires the same level of testimony as anything else in the Torah. And I need to know both Avadim, B'nei Chorin, to be Mamayat Avadim, and B'nei Brit to be Mamayat of Dekochavim, Tricha. Because Yashmin an Eved, if you just said that an Eved is not acceptable, that's because the Ein Lo Yachas, you see. An Eved is not really considered to be part of the building of society. He's only an agent of work in society, because a raya is that his children are not mityachasim acharav. So there's been no din of Yerusha or anything like that when it comes to an Eved. So he's viewed as a generic human entity. A generic human entity, I understand, is not part of the structure of society, but certainly a nochri. The Yeshlo Yachas, over there, he has all of the normal interrelationships of the long-term investment in society. I would have thought maybe he's not excluded from testimony when it comes to Nezikin. Emelo. On the other hand, Yashmin and Nochri. I would say the reason that I don't accept the elements of the Nochri in the construction of society and testimony, in Mishum Dolo Shayach B'mitzvot. He can't invest in a society because he's not part of the building of the society in terms of mitzvot, which is the centerpiece of our society. Mashenkein, an Eved, who does have mitzvot. So maybe locally, even though you're saying, but he doesn't have a future. So what? But maybe Emelo, maybe he's not excluded. Therefore, Tzricha, we need to know that neither of them are considered to be suitable for Edut, even for Nezikin. Time for our fast review. Eni, Rotani Rav Yosef, Chotzer Shutafim Vapundak Chayav Be'emal Hashem Vala Rega, to Yuv Tadar Rabbi Elazar, Amalach Rabbi Elazar, V'tizbara Matnita Bilo Plige, V'yotani Arba Akla Lota Yorv Vishim Emel Elazar Om Rabbi Nezakin, Kosher Rishut Nizak V'lo L'mazik Chayav V'kol the mazik v'lo nizak patur miko. L'ze v'l'ze k'gol chotzer shutafim v'abika patur balashen v'ala regel. But ala negichal negifal neshichal revitzal abita tam mishalem chatzin nezek mun mishalem nezek shalem. Lo l'ze v'lo l'ze k'gol chotzer she'ena shal shvehem chayav balashen v'ala regel. And ala negifa, neshicha, negifa, revitza, vibita, sham, tam, mishalim, chatzin, nezek, bun, mishalim, nezek, shalim. In any event, katani miyet, chatzor ha-shutafim v'abika, patur v'ala shen v'ala reyot. Ha! So kasha adode? No! Kitani, v'chatzor b'yuchedet l'zev l'zev, bein l'perod, bein l'shvarim. Whereas the bride of Rabbi Yosef was talking about chatzor b'yuchedet l'perod, v'inam b'yuchedet l'shvarim, which vis-a-vis shen is a chatzor ha-nizek. The economic ketani ocha dumya de pundak, whereas ketani atam dumya de bika. Obviously, those are two different situations. Shma mina matkiv la Rav Zeira. So kiva de miuchedet peirot, habeino biyo b'stei acher. Why is this a stei acher if you have a right to have your peirot there? V'leka omalei abaya, because in terms of the shor, you don't have a right to have your shor there. So kiva de miuchedet l'shvarim, sode acher karinam be. Omalei Ravach medivto Ravina. Shall we say that minamatanita lo plige? Perhaps the Amoroi, Rav Chista, Rav Elazar, nami lo plige? Omale, certainly possible. In v'im tim saloma plige, then the machlokus would be about this point that was just raised. B'kushna Rabbi Zeira, about to be a b'stei acher, u'bepiruka d'abaya plige, how to understand the concept of stei acher. Gufa. Arba'akya lo lotaya Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar ben Nezikin. Kosher reshut nizik v'lo lamazik chayav bakol. Notice, ala kolo katani, elakai bako, meaning bakulin niske, money rabbi tarfani, diomer mishunakarin bakhazra nizek, nezek shalem, mishalem, same as seifa, Lo lezeh v'lo lezeh k'gon chatzah shein osha shneim chayav bala shein v'la regel. So what does that mean? Lo lezeh v'lo lezeh. I mean, ilayim lo lezeh v'lo lezeh klal ela de'acher. How do you, what do you do about the need for a bead and be a beer b'stei acher v'leka? So it's got to mean el pshita lo lezeh v'lo lezeh ela de'chad. And then it goes on to say that when it comes to Karen, Tam Meshalim Chatzin Nezik Umud Meshalim Nezik Shalim, which is the opposite of Rabbi Tarfon. That's going on Libra the Rabbanan. The Amri Meshuna Karen Bechatzor Nezik Chatzin Nezik Umud Meshalim. Are you trying to tell me Rachel Rabbi Tarfon Vesefer Rabbanan? In the Omele Shmuel Rabbi Yehuda Shinana, just give up on this, okay? Shvok Mat Nitin V'tav Mat Rai Rachel Rabbi Tarfon Sefer Rabbi Rabbanan. Ravina Mishpe the Rabba says, no, I can make Kula Rabbi Tarfon, Umay Lola Zevalola Zev means Lola Zevalola Zev Perot, Elodachat. But vis a vis Shvarim, it's La Zevalola Zev. Therefore, Lagabi Shane, it's a Chotran Nizik. Lagabi Karen, it's a Rishot Arabim. So that it's just a combination of one, of two of the above three types of venues. So why do you say there's four? Yachi Arba'a. There's Shlosha Avi, Omre Nachum Ba'Yitzchak, you're right. Shlosha klalot barba mikomot. Shum kesef shava kesef dei bitin al piyedim b'nei chorim b'nei brit v'anashim b'chlal ha-nezek v'anizek v'amazek b'tashlomi. My shum kesef. Amr of Yudah shum ze lo yeh ala b'kesef. Tanina la'adot an rabbanan pora shizika talit v'talit shizika para enum nimtei tsei para b'talit v'talit b'para ela shaminota b'damim. Shove kesef, turn rabban. Shove kesef, milamed she'in beitin iskakim milanachasim she'yesh lehem achrayut. Avalim kodim nizik v'tafas, mitaltelim, then beitin govin lomia. None of this is true. Omar ma, shove kesef, milamed she'in beitin iskakim milanachasim she'yesh lehem achrayut. How in the world does shove kesef mean that? My mashba. Omar rabba barula, it means real estate because that's a dovra shove kol kesef. So what do you mean? My new dov shen lo ona'a. That could include avadim v'shtarodami in lem ona'a. Elo amar rabba barula, it means shove kesev, that is to say dov ranik nebet kesev. You got the same problem. Avadim are also nikne bet kesev. Elo amar avashi, shove kesev meaning velo kesev. And all other things, chattel, is basically kesev. Romele revira bachinil revuna bereda reyeshu, but it's not true. Tana shava kesef lo amish ein bezis kaka chalsim sheshal machrayut. V'tana yashiv lo rabot shava kesef afilu subin. Now we're talking about over here that the guy died. How come he's kinu beyatme? He beyatme. So then the lex doesn't make sense. He cut him nizim katavis betatli. Based and lets him keep the television of the yasmi. Why? If he asked me, am I beating go vin lo meyem? Kiri omar rov am reb lechman. Shetafas bechayim. Hachanam shetafas bechayim. Bifnei Beit Din, what is that coming to say? Now what? That the Prat Mamochen Nechasav, V'achaka Cholech LeBeit Din. So what are you going to say? Shema Mina Lova Umacha Nechasim V'achaka Bola Beit Din. Ein Beit Din Govin Lo Meyam. That's absurd. And the Prat LeBeit Din Et Yotot, there's a reference to Dine Knesot. Al Pei Din. Prat LeModi B'Knes V'achaka Bo Ei Din. Shu Patur. But, I mean, not everybody agrees with that. How about if you all the mandiyoma modi b'knasvachak bo edim chayav? So now, what's the explanation of the Mishnah, the Sefer, Michael Amema? This wasn't a separate piece al pi edim. It means al pi edim b'nei brit etc. As a Sefer tzrichale b'nei chorin and b'nei brit b'nei chorin l'mutei avadim b'nei brit l'mutei avadim avdei kochavim v'tzricha yash min eved b'shum nei lo yachas avon nochri. The Yeshlo Yachasimelo, the Ashwin and Ochrimish of the Lord Shayach Mitzvah, Aval Eve, the Shayach Mitzvah, Demelo. Therefore comes like Mishtomi Chirish, like Abin Ezekin, neither of them are kosher for a dude.